Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everyone. Just a quick content warning. This episode does include discussions around the topic of abuse as well as eating disorders. So I just wanted to give a little warning at the top. Now onto the show.
Sandspants Radio, Australia's most procedurally generated podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. I'm George Dimrose. This is a show where we ask you what's your story and what does it say about you. Today on the show we have food technologist and podcaster, Georgie Thursby. How you doing, Georgie?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. You're laughing already at it.
I know. I feel so self-conscious, but I'll be fine.
Yeah.
They can't see me, so it's fine.
Yeah. And that's the only thing that matters.
Yeah. I mean, I look great though.
Yeah. No, you do, definitely.
Thanks.
They're missing out.
Busy day in the office, guys, and I've come and I look absolutely 10 out of 10, yeah. I would say.
I like that level of confidence, you know what?
Thank you.
And I mean, it's true, look, you do. 11.
You know what? Stop, I'm blushing. If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to, what's the saying? I don't even know. I fucked it. Shit, am I allowed to swear?
Yes.
Oh, God.
You've already done it.
Yeah. I'm just going to shut up. It's, you go.
No,
you
no,
go.
It's a podcast. You're going to have to do some talking.
True.
It's kind of how it works.
Oh, it's two-way street, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so before we go into the book, you should like try to find out a little bit about the guest who's on. So
that's me.
Back, yeah, that is you.
I'm doing well.
You're good so far. You're nailing this.
Woo!
You are nailing this.
So, nailing it.
So even though you've got your own podcast, you've never done an interview sort of thing with someone before.
Yeah, so this is the first time I've been on someone else's podcast.
Right.
Hence the nerves. Now I get how my guests feel.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Interesting. I'm horrible. I usually give no shit. So I'm like, oh, you'll be fine. We'll wing it.
I'm glad you're learning now. Okay.
Oh.
Well, you'll be fine. We'll wing it. You'll
yeah.
be okay.
Exactly. Wait, what?
So... food tech, let's just go. So, actually, and by the way, you're probably going to have the record. I think you're the youngest guest I've had on.
Really?
Very exciting. Yeah.
Well, look at that claim.
Yeah.
Do I have to disclose my age?
You don't have to if you don't want to.
I'm 22. People are going to be wondering.
What?
22, and I would say three quarters, maybe.
Three quarters?
So, nearly 23.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's are you two? Who says three quarters?
Millennials.
Yeah. No, is that a thing?
I'm not even a millennial.
What are you?
I'm a 90s baby.
Okay. You are scraping in just with the 90s, I think. What, 98 or 99?
99. That is offensive. Thank you very much. I'm 98.
98. Is 99 offensive? Is that actually a thing? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I just made it offensive to myself.
Yeah. I got a feeling though. Once
I'm a Virgo. Of course it's offensive. Get it right.
All right. Everyone can already tell you're not from here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you were born in the UK
in the town of Appleby, which is in the Lake, well, it's just outside of the Lake District. Basically, I live on the border of Scotland.
Oh, that's like far north.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm like a proper northerner. I don't sound like it, but I'm from
Why
north.
Don't you sound like a proper northerner?
Because I went to private school.
Oh, really?
Yes.
They hammer it out of you?
Yes.
Really?
Elocution lessons. No, I'm joking. No, I went to private school. And yeah, there was like northerners that went to the private school, but I just didn't pick up the accent. I do have a bit of a northern accent when I get angry or when I'm really drunk.
Okay. That makes sense.
So yeah. Challenge to see which one you get from me first. Angry northern or drunk northern.
Okay. I feel like drunk northern's probably going to end up angry northern as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so that's, do your parents have the accent?
No, my mum is, well, she's actually from the north, but she doesn't have the accent. She did go to elocution lessons, actually. Wow. My grandmother sent her. And my dad is half Australian, half English, so he's got a bit of like a mix going on.
And you moved down here when you were...
Moved here. Yeah, sorry, I'm just going to interject. I'm like, you don't know. I'll tell the story, thanks.
I'm just...
Sorry, I'm being really harsh.
You tell the story in the order you would like, okay?
Hey, I'm the guest. I'm the podcast lead. No, fuck.
You keep starting very strong.
I know.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I should just shut up. No, so I moved here when I was in my late teens. And then that was 3.5 years ago. Can't do the math, so someone else can. That's how old I was. Well done. And then, yeah, finished uni last year. I'm still here. Couldn't get rid of me, guys. Also because of COVID, there was no flights.
Yeah, that does help. Yeah.
Does help.
So, and you're here on your own?
Yes, moved here on my own.
It's a bold move.
I'm a bold person, George.
I'm picking up on that. At least you start bold. I don't know if you maintain the boldness.
Look, I'm kind of like, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but I can't think of one. Maybe like, I don't know, an orange, really hard skin outside, but then when you get in, it's just like soft and juicy.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird. That is not okay. I hate oranges as well, so I don't know why I thought of that.
No, okay. That's so you're like an orange and... Great. So why did you come to Australia?
This question.
You get asked it, I know, constantly. But
get asked it all the time.
Okay, fine.
No, I'll answer because it'll annoy me. I'm a Virgo, remember?
I don't know. You're just saying that for all traits now to do with Virgo.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, so because I did nutrition as my degree, I was researching nutrition courses when I was back in the UK, and it turned out that Australia is like the place to do nutrition because you're so far advanced in your research and also just the way of eating. And if I became a qualified nutritionist in Australia and went back to the UK or America, I was also a qualified nutritionist. Okay. But if I studied in the UK and wanted to come out to Australia, for example, which has always been my goal, I would have to do another year of study to be qualified here.
Right.
And I was like, well... Fuck it.
Yeah.
Applied to uni. Didn't tell my parents. Got in. Had to tell my parents. They were like, just go.
They were...
I mean, they weren't quite that chill. Yeah. They're like, leave. See if we care.
Just go. Just interesting family dynamic. Because if they weren't upset, do you have your siblings that left before you to go do something or not?
Yeah, all three of them above me had just gone.
Where?
My brother went to Hong Kong when he freshly graduated uni. And he's been there like 10 years now. And then my sisters, they just moved out. They went to, one of them went to uni and then now lives in a place called Hull.
Mm-hmm.
Hull.
Yeah.
Hull. It's a bit of a rough place. I really hope no one from Hull ever listens to this because they will probably find me. And
it's a book podcast, not from Hull. Yeah, listen to it.
Hull is a lovely place though. I once went and saw ballet there and it was divine. And then my other sister moved to London and then moved back north. And yeah, so I was just home alone.
Oh, okay. So you're like, fuck, I'm getting out of here as well.
Yeah. I mean, the time had come to spread my wings and fly away.
Yeah. 18.
Yeah.
You know? You're like, I'm old.
Yeah, I know. I took a gap year and all my friends were off living the dream at uni. And I was like, it's time for me to go. Otherwise, I'll never leave.
Yeah.
Okay. So I left.
Great. That's pretty ballsy for 18.
Yeah.
And 3/4 or whatever the math is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cool. And then you, with the nutrition side of things,
food yes.
technologist now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, that's just interesting. What is that? I think people would be like, what is that?
I always get nervous when I get asked this question in more of like a public format, just in case I actually get it wrong and I don't do my job description any justice. And they're like, that's not a food technologist. And I'm like, well.
How often are you getting asked in a public forum?
Hey, I'm pretty big, if you didn't know. So food technologist, my day-to-day job, basically I work in new product development for a food company. And so I work throughout the whole from product ideation to, you know, benchtop formulations, talking to contract manufacturers, And then getting all the nutritional information together and then making sure that our labels are within food laws and regulations so we don't get called up. And I write a lot of the copy for the company. So our product pages on the internet and our like social media and stuff, I help out with that.
Oh, so it's like everything.
Yeah, it's because it's a small company. So I get a lot of experience. And then I then also, once the product has been made, I then have to do the quality and food safety side of it. So that's a lot of documentation and admin, which is boring, but exciting. Woo.
So do you actually test like how long it takes to expire and stuff?
Yeah. So we do like shelf life testing. So it's really common. People, like normal customers and food consumers, don't realize, but so there's accelerated shelf life testing. So you put the food, like the product, when it's come off the manufacturing line, you put it in like a controlled environment, usually warmer, and every 10 degrees above room temperature is double time. So for example, 1 week in like the incubator would be 2 weeks on shelf, yep, at ambient temperature. So then you can test the product shelf life to make sure that the expiry date and the best before date that you've put on is accurate. And then, so yeah, you have to do like a lot of chemical and physical tests to it, but then also sensory tests to it.
As in taste and
yeah,
touch and things.
Not necessarily touch.
You know, when that food's off, you touch it and you're just like, oh yeah.
Just kind of like taste and smell.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And like appearance.
Okay. Yeah. And I always assume in Australia, we're going to be ultra conservative here with any use by date. So any use by date is probably like a week earlier than it needs to be. Is that a crazy thing to think, or is that kind of true?
So do you know the difference between use by and best before?
Yeah, but you know, in case someone doesn't know who's listening.
So use by is,
I know, obviously.
So use by dates is more of like a food safety. So that is when anything beyond that date, the food is technically unsafe to eat. So that's because deterioration could have occurred. May that be like microbiological, chemical, or yeah, basically not safe to eat. Best before is just when the food is like the most optimum.
Right.
So anytime after that, it's still safe to eat. It's just not the best condition it could be. You'll find with a lot of dry goods, it's best before, or things that are done in like what we call aseptic packaging. So it's like a very clean, sterile environment. That's usually best before. Mm-hmm. Whereas things that have a short shelf life, so you dairy products, your meat products, fresh produce, that would usually have use by.
Okay.
Because if you ate them off, you'd get very sick.
Yeah.
Whereas like chips, you're not going to get sick.
You looked at me so
sorry.
Presumptuously as you said that, you're like, duh.
Duh. Whereas chips, they have like a best before because they're...
Right. So is that because you do like a sensory test and you're like, oh, this is off on this one, but it's still good to eat? Or is that just like...
No, it's just kind of like your knowledge. Okay. Innate knowledge that you have food tech.
That's a food tech, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's a really interesting job. It is very high pressured. Just to bolster up my ego, make myself feel really important. Mm-hmm. It can be really high pressured and stressful because, yeah, if one thing goes wrong... it can be disastrous.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to the book and then kind of we can still jump around and get some more details about your life because, you know, how close are you with your siblings, actually, just quickly?
As in age or like age. Closeness?
Both. Okay.
So I am 22, turning 23 in August. Remember my birthday, guys. And then my other sisters are 25, 29, and then my brother is 32. Yes, 32.
Okay, so 10 years and pretty evenly split out.
Yeah.
Okay, and you guys were pretty tight, but...
Yeah, no,
I'm not trying to...
We all went to boarding school, so that kind of... Yeah, same boarding school, but when I started, my brother was in his final year. So I actually realized I've never lived with my brother because he was already at boarding school when I was born. Mm-hmm. So yeah, going to boarding school, you don't really have that closeness as a tight-knit family as is. You're very independent.
So what, boarding school from what age?
8.
From 8 years old?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's so crazy. That's such as like, is it like the whole year you're just living on campus?
Basically, yeah. And then you go home. We went home like 6 times a year.
What?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
From 8 years old.
Yeah.
It's like Harry Potter.
Very similar to Harry Potter, I suppose you could say.
Like, just like in such a different experience. Like, it's kind of cool in a way, but you might. So, are you close with the people from school?
Nah. Oh, no. I'm close with some people. Like, actually, some of my closest friends, like nearest and dearest, I'm still really good in contact.
Yeah.
In really good contact with them. But no, a lot of people. I mean, look, when you move to the other side of the world, you drift apart.
Yeah. I can understand that. It's just a, that's a, that's, and was it close to home at least, the boarding school, or was it other side?
Home for me, my parents moved around a lot, okay, like international. So that's why we went into boarding school. So, because my parents were moving around maybe every 3 or 4 years. So they were like, it's not fair on the kids to potentially change education systems from like English to American to local, and then also having to remake friends every single time you moved. So then, yeah, we went to boarding school at the age of 8.
Wow. Mm. That's kind of, that's an interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
It's different. It's
so unique.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, if you were going to boarding school, I assume there was a lot of other kids who also had.
Yeah, there was a lot of boarders. Yeah. So it wasn't really unusual. But I think that's why moving to Australia wasn't such a big thing for me.
Yeah.
Because I was used to being away from my parents.
Yeah.
And like, they lived in Australia for like 3 or 4 years when I was back in the UK. So like, having distance between me and my family, I'm cool with. Super cool. I'm fine.
Totally fine.
Totally fine.
Yeah. Just so one more thing just with that, because that's interesting. So even though you have, yes, your sisters and they're relatively close in age, if you've gone to boarding school from 8 years old, that means you never would have really hung out with them, because you just hang out with the other people in your
Yeah, level. And then you only hang out with each other when you're at home, and then it's just like normal bickering, annoying, screaming at each other.
And like, it's 6 times a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool.
I don't know.
That's a completely different experience than what I had. The Greek parents. So you just like, you gotta,
you've got to love your family.
Yeah. You know, they're clutching onto you with all they can. So that's very different. Okay. So let's go to the book anyways, and then we'll go around. Your book of choice for today is?
A Little Life. I don't actually know how to pronounce the author's name. So.
Well,
I'll let you do that.
By Hanya Yanagihara.
There you go.
There you go. Now, this is, I got to say, a terrifying book for someone to choose. Also, interesting that my youngest guest ever is choosing this as their favorite book. Just,
well,
I don't know, because it's...
Yeah, the first time I read it, I was 18.
Okay.
And yes, I did go back and read it a second time last year in lockdown.
You're acting like a... That's fine. You can read it, reread it.
If that isn't a flex, I don't know what is.
Because it's so long.
Yeah, because it's so fucking long. But it's a great book. It's worthwhile, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So for people who for some quick background on the book, super famous book. Came out a few years ago. Very popular. It's actually when I do my bookish show, because I always ask people what's their favorite book. And that's always one that gets mentioned, A Little Life. Very popular.
I got on it before it got popular, can I just say.
Did you?
Yes.
I'm just looking here. It came out in 2015.
And I finished school in 2016 and I read it in 2016.
So you
And it wasn't that popular then. And whereas I feel like with lockdown, I'm getting jumping right on the defense here and I do not care. I feel like with COVID and lockdown, it became a massive thing. And I was like, already read it. I'll read it again.
That was last year.
Exactly.
It was a very popular book. I like how you just need to claim it. Ugh. Kids today, I tell you.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
I don't really care about spoilers, but in this one, I guess maybe there is a bit spoiler. But we do have to spoil it because
we can't avoid talk about all book. Spoilers.
You can't talk, and which I say every time, but especially with this book, considering what it's actually about, which you don't find out till about a quarter of the way through the book.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have to, if we're going to talk about this book, we're going to have to talk about what it's
about.
So essentially it starts off. So yes, if you want to read it, guys, go read it. Otherwise, this isn't actually a spoilery book as well, though, because it is something, it's not like a murder mystery. So.
Yeah, it's not like a storyline.
Yeah. So it is about the experience.
Yeah.
Essentially, it starts off about four friends. All males, which we can, I'd love to talk about that as well. But all males who are friends in like school and gone to university friends, sorry. And then it's basically the book is about their lives that grow up, or at least that's what it seems like it is.
Yeah.
But actually, after about a quarter of the way through the book, and I'll be honest, from here, I'm going to say that I probably we can have a bit of discussion about this because I have very mixed feelings about this book. But essentially, about a quarter of the way through, it's mainly about one guy, and it's mainly about trauma. It's not really about friendship. It's not really about. It's mainly about a trauma and living with trauma, essentially.
Yeah, because and one the effects that trauma has on this one character.
Yeah, and like obviously the relationships that he has with other people as a result of his trauma. But yeah, that's it's not about like, yeah, that's what it's about.
It's not a happy ending.
It's not a happy middle either.
No, it's not a happy book.
No, it's not. It's a, yeah, so.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah. So I guess the first question I'll ask is, so that's the book. Yes. It's very, very traumatic stuff happening.
Yeah, it's definitely some heavy reading.
To be honest, it does give off a vibe, and I'm not trying to be dismissive of it, but like, it is almost abuse porn. And in terms of like the amount that happens to the character is completely ridiculous. Yeah, it's sadistic. Like that's why one of those things I was reading, I was like, this is a bit much.
There are times where you really just kind of have to take a step back and you're like, I'm not okay. I'll leave you for a week and I'll come back when I'm okay.
Yeah, that's one of the issues I actually kind of have with it as well. But before we go into that, why is it your favorite book? Why do you think?
I think it's because it's not anything that I've ever read before. You know, it's not your typical murder mystery or your romantic novel or one with a very generic storyline. You never know what's going to come around the corner. And I think that's what kind of gripped me the most. And I adored how open and brutal it was, to be honest. You know, I have never read anything like that before. And I feel like it's a massive taboo subject as well, the whole book and what goes on in the book. I feel like, yeah, it was just very ahead of its time as well, I think. I hate saying that because I'm 22. But like
it's
when
a bold position.
At the time it came out, there was, you know, it was before, I could be wrong actually, but you know, it was like maybe before like the Me Too movement and people were kind of speaking up about their experiences with sexual assault and emotional abuse and violence. So yeah, I think that's kind of what drew me to it. And at the first time I read it, you know, I had someone very close to me go through a very traumatic sexual assault. And, you know, having something that I could kind of relate and understand their thought processes as well. That kind of was why I was automatically drawn to this book.
All right.
Yeah.
So it actually gave you that insight into
the struggles. Yeah. The struggles that they would have been feeling and expressing themselves, especially around other people. No matter how close you are to someone or people, if you've been through that trauma or any trauma, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be sexual abuse or physical abuse or emotional, there's always going to be part of you that's shut off. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be a part of you that maybe doesn't, you know, express how you feel. And it does kind of put a barrier up, no matter how much people are like, oh, I'm fine.
I hope that's not like the immediate reaction. Yeah, I'm fine. But
like even years after, it never goes away. So I think that was also another reason why I adore this book.
Yeah. So it gave you actually that insight into the friend and kind of helped. Did it, I'm not trying to pry, go into this, but like, do you feel like that's kind of played out a bit with the friend? You've seen this, or do you feel like maybe there is, because one of the views I would have about this book is it's grim about what means. So I'm just wondering if maybe that's reflected in your friend, or maybe they've actually had a bit more of a healthy.
Definitely healthier. But there are, you know, it's not like for like, but, you know, it kind of does make you just kind of take a step back and think about their actions or their how they're being and being like, okay, yeah, makes sense. Yeah, so you kind of like take a step back and it kind of just like, for someone who hasn't been through that, it kind of does give you a bit of an insight and just kind of necessarily, yeah, take the pressure off, also off yourself, being like, I'm never going to fully understand and that's okay. And I've just got to be there in any way possible.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's I agree. I think that's a look with, this is a risque. This is the laugh of a nervous man going into this, especially as a keyword man.
God.
Going into this topic. But
hey, that's why I'm here.
Exactly. You can.
I'm a millennial.
Yeah. We're woke.
We're fine.
Did the. Okay. So, yeah, no, that's. Yeah, it gives a really deep insight into that side of things. It's the side of the difficulty of getting past traumatic experiences in terms of how they can twist the way you think.
Yeah.
And. the blame and the thinking that you deserved it as well, which is really interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I can't talk on behalf of people who have suffered from any sort of trauma. But I think it is, you know, very common that the victims do always say, well, it was my fault, or I deserved it, or they can't escape the blame, if that makes sense. They always are going to blame themselves.
Yeah. They're going to involve themselves in
it. Yeah. And I think they're like, well, if I deserve that, then I'm such a horrible human being, so how can I physically cause harm to myself? And that's obviously what the character Jude goes through. Mm-hmm. And that's how he kind of makes everything necessarily seem. And I say this in a brief, what are they called? Bunny ears.
Quotation marks.
Yeah. Abbreviation, whatever they're called. In quotation marks, he harms himself to make him feel fine for that very short period of time.
I think that part there I always thought was a reflection of control over the body. Like, that's why he kind of did it.
Interesting.
That's how I saw it. Yeah. That's how I read it. I'm like, I would have thought, yeah, like, you know, I'm harming myself. It's like that classic, you know, this, you take it my body all the other time, but this is me doing it and having control of that part of myself.
Yeah. No, okay. That's actually really interesting, because I kind of interpret it as he felt dirty and disgusting. So for him releasing all of that, okay, yeah, it still made him feel really shit about it, but it was kind of like an escape.
Yeah, and I think it does mention that as well, so I'm not saying
it
doesn't have to be.
But also, like, this is the thing about books, interpret it how you interpret it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a say? I just made that quote.
Ah, you just invented a quote.
That's it, I'm out.
Interpret it how you interpret it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Enjoy your evening.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So, I've mentioned to you when you said this is your favorite book. I have more mixed feelings about it, I guess, as a part of it is being possibly as a guy coming into it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think the main issue that I have, and I'm not taking away anyone's personal liking or dislike of the book in terms mm-hmm. of what they draw from it, but the thing that always stuck with me reading it was like anger at Jude for mm-hmm. being, and this is me just being honest. He doesn't deal with it well at all. And he blamed himself and he harms everyone around him as a result of him saying he deserves it. And he just never lets himself at all go past that, which is legit because he went through that. But the way I always looked at it, I was always like, and again, I can't believe we're just going to every topic here, but, if he was a pedophile at the end of the book, he would have exactly the same mentality as he has in the book. Like, there's no difference between those two people. So, and maybe that means we've got to have more understanding for people who go through trauma and end up going that bad with it. But that's how I viewed it. So I was always like, he's not a good person. Like, he's a monster. And he's been turned into one as a result of what's happened to him. But still, he's not in any way a good person because he's not.
Yeah.
Like,
that's and like the part. Yeah, like the way that he does treat, you know, everyone around him is awful.
The whole time.
Yeah.
He's bad to everyone the whole time. Like,
I think if I had a friend like that who treat you that badly, you'd be like, what the actual fuck? But I suppose, you know, that's where kind of that feeling when you love someone so much and you adore them so much, no matter what they do, they cannot hurt you.
But that just...
You just obviously haven't been in love.
But that just sounds like abuse. Like, that just sounds like exactly the problem. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So if
we're... Love can be abusive.
Yeah. So we're saying...
Coming from a 22-year-old. Obviously.
Have you been in love?
Fuck no.
Never?
Nah.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it a co-ed boarding school?
Yeah.
But nothing, no. I guess living with everyone all the time would kind of...
Yeah. Okay, I lied. I thought I was in love once, but I was like 15, so obviously not true.
You can feel it though at the time.
Yeah, but I was 15.
Isn't that like the most intense love? Potentially? just throwing it out there. Okay, you're the one that brought up love. That's why I thought I would ask. But that, what you're saying there as well, though, that's the whole idea. The fact that if you're so in love with someone, you let them off from doing anything. It's like, that's just abuse.
You know, no, not like, let them off. You just accept it. You accept them because you love them.
But like this is where I get... It's a classic book thing, I think, and it does happen in movies. Because this person's the main character, everyone's like...
That's true.
Everyone's like, oh, you're great. And it's like, but this character's literally done nothing but treat everyone horribly the entire time apart from brief moments of niceness. And you're like, this could easily be reframed as someone that no one wants to talk to.
Yeah. It's like, what's that? It's got a name for it where we all love the hero or the main character. It's like the mentality that you have to adore the main character.
Yeah. And it kind of gives it a free pass. And
yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Jude wasn't my favorite character.
No. Everyone's favorite character is Willem. Has to be.
Yeah. I mean, I can picture him as sexy.
Yeah.
But also he's a great guy.
He's just the best in every way.
Also, Loki, I love JB. JB, the eccentric artist, very much into drugs, crazy, but also a shit person as well.
But that's the thing to say, at least, but even his shitness, you actually almost understand because he does.
Can you?
I feel like he's like nicer in many ways than.
He knows when he's wrong, but then he.
And he grows.
But also he's like horrible to the point of unforgiving.
Yeah, but I mean, even I think okay, one thing is he grows as a character.
Yeah, he's the only one that actually has growth in.
Yeah, which
throughout the whole story.
Willem is kind of, I felt, quite one note, and you love him.
Yeah.
Country boy who's sweet and handsome. Like, how could you not love him?
But also, he's been through a bit of trauma. Not necessarily trauma, but...
No, that's still trauma.
Yeah.
It's not abuse trauma.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he's brother, and he's looking after him and all that stuff. Right.
Yeah, and then really bad relationship with his parents, and then basically he's by himself.
Yeah.
It's traumatic.
He's by himself and it's traumatic. Interesting.
Oh, here we go. I've just put the dots together. Here we go. Buckle in, boys and girls, we're in for a ride.
You're the one that's...
I know, I've only got myself to blame.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just saying that's an interesting point to make. Is that something you've felt sometimes, maybe a little bit?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, God, yeah. So, bit of a backstory. When I moved over here, 6 months in, I got diagnosed with anorexia and I had to go through my recovery all alone, and I kept it secret for like 4 or 5 months. Only my family knew. I told my parents, obviously. But yeah, I didn't tell any of my friends for like 4 or 5 months because I was ashamed by it. So yeah, I did feel alone. Going through recovery by myself, going to my doctors, dietitians, psychologist appointments.
Okay.
It was lonely.
That's a lot to throw in. Okay.
I mean, look, you're not here for a good time. You're here to get to know me in a book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, this is... So, okay.
So I suppose I could relate to Willem's... loneliness. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm not physically alone, I'm mentally felt alone.
Right. And is that, and that's not the only connection I'm drawing right now. Cause like, why didn't you tell your friends?
Well, I didn't really know them that long.
Yeah. Cause it was still new.
Yeah.
So, and if any of this topic is too far, it's totally let me know. Was the anorexia a result of moving, or was it there kind of before?
It was there before. I remember going off on my gap year travels for 6 months and for some reason had in my head I had to come back skinnier than when I left. Don't know why that came about. And then I got back from my travels, then I got really into like health and gym and fitness and it was great. And then I was going to study nutrition, so I had to be healthy. And then moved to Australia and I think it had a bigger impact on me than I thought.
Moving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then I just kind of kept spiraling.
Right. And okay. So that's, yeah. So just, you don't really know what kind of sparked it kind of just.
No. And I had hypnotherapy once actually. And we were talking about, you know, interesting. We were talking about the earliest, because the thing that came up for me was loneliness and my earliest memory of loneliness. And I think not eating for me and for like excessive exercise was my coping strategy of being lonely.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
in when I went to hypnotherapy, have you ever had hypnotherapy?
No.
Craziest experience ever. I would honestly recommend people just to go because it's so crazy. I was a bit, you got to be open to it before, otherwise it won't work.
Yeah.
And I know like my mum went and had it and then I've had a couple of friends that have gone and had it and it's honestly not life-changing, but it is mind-opening.
So if you've got an issue to go do it, or you're saying just to go even if you don't have anything?
Not even if you have anything. Maybe, I mean, look, everyone's got a bit of something. No, so it very much taps into your subconscious and takes you back to like your earliest memories of something. So you kind of talk about what you want to get out of the session and everything. And then if you go to someone good, they kind of like take you back and it's all in your subconscious. And it's so weird because you can vividly see this earliest memory. And
as if.
But I could not, like consciously could not remember it.
What?
Yeah.
But you could remember it afterwards.
Nope. Like I remember the memory that I said, but I can't physically remember the memory. Like it was when I was like 3 years old, sat in a car with my siblings and my mum and they were all, you know, we were living in Dubai at the time. I'd just been picked up from kindergarten and so like my sister and school, like she was at school and I just remember feeling really lonely in the car. Yeah. And it was like subconscious, crazy.
So but even though you remembered it then in the session afterwards, you don't remember that memory. Or you do now?
I don't.
You do remember being
like thrilled. I remember the memory.
Oh, you do remember the memory.
But no, I remember saying the memory, but I don't remember the memory.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't remember being physically present in the memory.
Oh, really?
So it's not like, oh my God. Remember when we went on that family holiday to Cambodia?
Yeah.
Like that. I remember.
You can picture that, yeah. With this, you can't.
No.
That's such a weird thing, but you can remember saying it. So it's like, okay. But you felt a feeling of intense loneliness then. And that's a 3.
Yeah.
So that's something which you've had like kind of hanging around you.
Yeah.
Right. That's.
And then I kind of bought it on myself moving out to Australia. So really, yeah. I'm my own worst enemy.
Okay. And. Wow. All right. That's.
Whew. Throwing you a bit off track.
Yeah. I don't know what. Okay. It's just a lot. Okay. I'm going to go to. I want to try this.
That's honestly, I'll give you the name of the chick that I went to. She's amazing.
Australia.
Yeah.
Oh,
in,
cool.
Just in Malvern.
Oh, I'm so intrigued. I'm going to do that. Well, and I just want to go back just because I feel like it's still hanging there a little bit. So with the anorexia that you went through and you so 6 months in to being in Australia, was it a case of you like just waking up and being like, I got to look into this? Or was it someone recommended it? Or
no. So I went up to Port Macquarie to go see a family friend. And when I was up there, it was kind of like an intervention. My mum had spoken to our family friend and was like, I need to talk to Georgina about this. And they basically teed it up.
Oh, no.
And mum was like, look, I want you to go and see a doctor when you get back to Melbourne. And I was like, why? And she was like, I think you have lost a lot of weight and I think you're too skinny. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, no. And I didn't think that I was fat, but I didn't think that I looked good. And I had more, I was training for a half marathon. Again, I say that in quotation marks. That was just the way that my eating disorder portrayed itself. Mm. So I had to get up at 4 a.m. every morning and run 20 kilometers because I was training for a half marathon. Mm. And I just wouldn't eat. And so, yeah, my mum was like, please just do it for me. Go and see a doctor. So I just booked an appointment online, the first appointment I could get when I got back to Melbourne. And by pure chance, the doctor that I got specializes in eating disorders. So if that isn't meant to be, I don't know what it is. So then, yeah, went and started seeing her, and she was just like a gem. I love my doctor, still see her to this day. She made sure that we had that level of trust and we had a relationship before she even brought up eating disorders.
All right.
Yeah.
So then why were you there? Like, as in,
so she got bloods taken the first time that I was there. So then obviously all my bloods were ridiculously low. So then she was like, come back in next week and we'll talk about your bloods. And then it was just like little things that she always found reasons for me to come back to.
Right.
And then she would just weigh me every week. And obviously the weight was going down. And then I was adamant that I had like a parasite or something.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like, maybe I picked it up. And I think my mum was as well, because I went traveling in Asia. They went, maybe you picked it up there. And it's just like been dormant and now it's come to life. If that's what parasites do. I don't know.
It's amazing. What a reason.
But no, it was probably about 6 weeks before I got diagnosed. And it was really good because my doctor kind of encouraged me to go and do some research about it. And I thought I had orthorexia, which isn't it isn't recognized as an eating disorder just yet. It should be. And basically, so orthorexia is an unhealthy obsession with healthy eating. So I thought I had that, because I was like, I only eat greens. I just eat, you know, hardly anything else, like no fat, no sugar, minimal carbs. So I thought I had that. And then I was kind of talking to her about it, and she was like, okay, yeah. So that kind of then opened my mind up to an eating disorder. And then, yeah, she diagnosed me.
Right. So she really spent a while letting you kind of sort of find the door on your own.
Yeah.
Little nudge.
Yeah. Which could be really dangerous, because it was literally at the point, you know, she sat me down and she was like, if you lose any more weight next week, may it be 100 grams, I'm going to have to admit you to hospital and you're going to have to withdraw from uni. And for me, that was what I call my light bulb moment. Cause I was like, fuck, I came out to Australia to go to uni. So if I have to drop out, that means that I'm a bigger failure than actually sorting this shit out.
Yeah.
So then that's when I kind of like committed to recovery. I say that loosely. It was when I accepted that I had to recover. I didn't commit it to it.
But you just, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because like, yeah, that even that mentality of having no, because you just said didn't know before. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You were just like, I'm healthy. It's
yeah. Fine. I was very much, I was oblivious to it. Whereas everyone around me, like even my friends, they were like, obviously they met me when I was really skinny anyway. So they were like, we just kind of thought it was who you were, but we knew that it wasn't quite right and everything. But yeah. And I mean, look, and this is, so my podcast is about eating disorder recovery. And this is what I've kind of realized as well, talking to other people who have gone through recovery for their various eating disorders. I feel like when, and I could be very controversial in saying this, and obviously recovery, everyone is completely different. It's all individual. But I think when people rip off the Band-Aid and they diagnose you there and then, first appointment, it's a lot. It's a lot to take on. I mean, it took me 6 weeks and I was still like, eating disorder. Ooh, no. So I think when it's like, you know, a very much abrasive and quick diagnosis, that's when people, what's the word, are against.
Push back against it
and they're not willing to recover and they're very much in denial. Okay. Whereas I was very much warmed up to the idea of it.
So, yeah, so your doctor really knew how to kind of approach the issue.
Yeah, she was the OG.
So, and then you've gotten better since then. And
yeah.
Yeah. And
so touch wood right now. Yeah, I'm fine.
Does it feel like something you have to look out for?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And people... Some people say, oh, yeah, I'm fully recovered. And I think you never fully recover from an eating disorder. It's always in the back of your mind. You always have that little voice or parrot on your shoulder second guessing you, sometimes louder than others. Sometimes you can't manage it. Sometimes you just listen to it. Other days you can really fight back against it. And, you know, there's going to always be triggers in my life. But, you know, I've got to a point now where I'm very comfortable managing it and I know how to manage my eating disorder.
Right. Okay. So you stay.
My little Eddie. That's the voice that I call it.
Eddie?
Yeah.
What is it, just like, are you going to look, you're being unhealthy or?
Yeah. Or, you know, you ate chips last night, so you're not going to have breakfast and you have to go on a run.
Right.
And you can't eat before midday.
Right.
That sort of thing.
It's so weird because like there is an element of that which could be, and I'm not dismissing what you're going through.
No, of course not.
Like it's weird how that's like an element of that could be healthy for a healthy person, but then it's just that twisting, and especially if it's I guess it's kind of like any addiction almost. Like one beer is fine for most people, but if you're an alcoholic, if you let that thing happen, then you're going to slip down that spiral. So it's just a different
and way of as soon as you kind of entertain it, it's very easy just to get caught up in it.
Really?
Yeah, so easy. Like COVID last year, going in lockdown, I had a massive relapse. And, you know, it took me maybe a good 2-3 months to kind of realize. And you get so good at hiding things, like so good.
From
other people. Being like, oh, yeah, I've had breakfast. Oh, yeah, I had dinner. Oh, yeah, no, I'm not feeling, oh, I feel really sick. I don't feel like eating.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, I've only done one workout today when I've really done like 2.5 plus like a 2-hour walk.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess, I'm just thinking back to what I was just saying about Jude in the book and like how this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've given me a different perspective on it because I can see how like in terms of talking to friends and stuff. How that relates to this, how you could relate to that.
Yeah. No, it definitely does. And I think when you are going through something, and I don't know if it's, you know, just mental or like any sort of trauma or anything, I think it's always hard to know who you trust enough to tell. And also you never know how people are going to react. I mean, 9 times out of 10, they react way better than you think and it's all in your head. But no, I can kind of relate to, you know, internalizing it all and keeping it from people. Yeah, I was so embarrassed because I always thought that eating disorders were just like a teenage girl thing, like 14, 15 year olds just trying to get attention and they just stopped eating.
Hmm.
Even I thought that.
Yeah. It's because you don't realize it's like a mental.
Yeah.
The Louis Theroux documentary about anorexia, for me, that was a game changer in my head of what it was. Like, I've always been I've had the same attitude.
Yeah.
Just kind of dismissed because I'm like, how could you not know? Like, you can see yourself getting thinner. It's measurable.
Yeah.
But
also as well, like, how much of it's not just anorexia. Like, you as in everyone, you listening to this podcast as well, should watch ABC You Can't Ask That about eating disorders. And there you have the whole array of eating disorders. Because, you know, when people talk about eating disorders, they automatically think anorexia, bulimia, and borderline sometimes binge eating.
Yeah.
Yes, they're the most three common things. But there are so many different eating disorders that just go under the radar that people just think you're just being fussy. You just don't like certain foods. But it's an actual phobia of foods. So yeah, I think I just really want to highlight that, you know, there is a whole different range of eating disorders and they are all a mental illness, every single one of them. And the eating disorder, the actions that people partake in, they're the symptoms of the mental illness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all kind of like the same base, like neuron firing a certain way and then it's just revealing itself in different ways, but it's that same. Okay. This has been this has turned into such an intense. Like, I knew going in, I'm like,
I'm
a little
so
light. This is going to
sorry,
be full on. But this has just gone like 6 times more full on than I expected.
You got more than you fucking bargained for, didn't you?
Anyone who's stuck around is going to. We started off so light.
I know. God, I thought I was nearly funny at the start.
Oh, God. Well, we can still bring it back.
We can bring it back. Come on. We've got to bring it back.
No. It's good fun, like, to get it because, like, it is. Yeah, okay. So, it's interesting because I guess my gut thing when I look at something like A Little Life to talk about that again,
Oh, yeah. That's why we're here.
It's focused. Yeah. But I was always thinking of it in terms of abuse and like that, but you're looking at it in terms of trauma from whatever experience.
Yeah.
That's even broader. And obviously that, and it's giving you an insight into that. And it's weird how you've got that connection also from the other side, the loneliness of.
Yeah.
They're all kind of lonely. That's the thing, because they're all can't relate to each other.
We'll
put up
those. Yeah. Walls. And also I think their friendship as well, you know, they do start off at university together and they are really close. And then it's just kind of like the story of getting older, relationships do kind of tend to fizzle out, and maybe you're not as close as you always think that you are to people. And just kind of seeing that transition as well. But yeah. Go on. Ask your question. Psychoanalyze me. I dare you.
No, it's just it's a lot to think for an 18-year-old.
That's true.
To see that. And I do wonder how much of that was you.
I do just want to say that I think when I read it when I was 18, I didn't. This is why, and partly I wanted to read it again. I don't think I was mentally mature enough to understand all of it. Whereas reading it again when I was 22, and maybe it was just rereading it again, I picked up on a lot more things, and especially the under messages. Under messages. Am I okay? Look, guys, I've been at work all day, and like my brain is just fried.
The under messages. That's so good.
That's my favorite. Fucking subtext.
Yeah, yeah.
Undertones.
Undertone.
What did? Can I ask you a question? What did you think of Harold and Julia, Jude's adopted parents?
This who taught them, and then he's still around in their lives, and then eventually adopts them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What, I thought they were lovely.
Yeah.
Why?
No, me too. I just wanted to know, because I also feel like, I don't know about you, but I felt to every single character I could kind of relate to slightly. Maybe more Harold, you know, putting others that you adore and love before yourself, mm-hmm. and always kind of, yeah, kind of selfless.
Yeah. Like me, I'm kind of selfless.
I hate saying it, but yeah. No, like the people that I adore,
yeah.
and, you know, care so much for and hold a special place in my heart, I would go honestly like above and beyond
yeah.
anything. I would help them murder a body.
Yeah.
Murder a body. Bury a body.
I was going to let you get away with that one. But yeah, okay. So you felt that as well.
Nice. Yeah, and I feel like Harold would do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's always there, supportive, loving.
And also, he's fucking old and he still gets around. I want to be like that.
Yeah. We've wandered around a lot. Let's call it there. Should anyone follow you anywhere? You got this.
Yes. So I have an Instagram page. It's called Georgie's Grub. And it's where I develop and share recipes. So if you want to be exposed to some crazy food and recipes that you can cook along at home, give me a follow.
Nice.
Give me a message. Perfect. Oh, and then also my podcast, Road to Recovery, and that's on Instagram @ Road to Recovery Podcast.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you very much for being on.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.